the automobile is an inescapable presence in the urban landscape. Everywhere you go in the modern city, the noise, smell, and physical presence of cars forces itself upon those who are not encased in their steel and glass exoskeletons. Many North Americans take the ubiquity of the automobile for granted, assuming that the environmental, psychological, and economic costs of our car culture are unchangeable facts. However, resistance to the unbridled use of automobiles does exist. There are those who understand that there are viable alternatives to car culture. One of the most unique expressions of dissent against the automobile is the phenomenon known as critical mass. The movement got a start in San Francisco in September 1992 and has since spread to become an international celebration of bike culture and autonomous resistance to the hegemony of cars in our urban landscape. In this hour, we're going to be examining critical mass, as well as the history of bike activism, and what it means to the future of our society and our environment.
Alternative forms of transportation, just because I think we're in a point right now where we use way too much of the Earth's resources, and I'm really not a supporter of how much we abuse gas. And so, you know, I sort of go to the extreme, I guess, of a bike.
Cars, cars everywhere, what a stink. Packed together street by street, eliminating our feet. We had nothing to like. Then we rediscovered the bike.
Let's start with some basic facts about cars and bikes. The bicycle is the most efficient form of transportation on Earth, even compared to walking, which uses roughly 100 calories per passenger mile. Bikes use only 35 calories. Now, compare the bicycle to your average automobile, which uses up a scandalous 1,860 calories per passenger mile. Keep in mind also that the energy that cars use comes from petroleum, therefore it is non-renewable and it pollutes. Bikes, on the other hand, use human power. A human engine, so to speak, can power a bicycle for about 8 kilometers on the calories from a single ear of corn, whereas a car would stop after about 85 meters with the same energy. Unlike petroleum, the energy that a human requires to make a bike roll needs no expensive distilling or refining, nor does it need a military-industrial complex to keep it supported. But more on that later. Since bicycles do not burn gas, they are naturally, obviously, much better for the environment. They do not cause massive road degradation or potholes, and their small-scale maneuverability makes them a much more flexible option for urban commuting. Auto-bound humans find themselves isolated, stuck in traffic jams of their own creation, impoverished from committing 15 to 20% of their income on the automobile, and increasingly unhealthy due to the past opportunities at exercise and fresh air. Bicycle riders enjoy physical, psychological, and political freedom from the mechanical beast.
I want to do this because I think it's important to take back the streets, and I think it's important that we evolve and get rid of cars. Cars are a big problem for humanity in general, and I think it's good that people think about their modes of transportation and how they live. And also, I just love riding my bike because it feels really good, and it's an excellent outlet for all kinds of emotions and energy.
I saw this happen last year. I was walking on St. Catherine Street and I saw the group of people and it really inspired me. So this year at the Anarchist Book Fair, I got a flyer and I just told myself, I put it in the agenda and I thought, hey, I want to be part of it, because I think that the message is that we're not going to take over cars, but we're still, it's a good option to just travel and take our place and pour s'affirmer, là.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like. You say black, I say white. You say bar, I say bite. You say shark, I say him. And yours was never my scene, and I don't like Star Wars. You say Rose, I say Royce. You say God, give me a choice. Say Lord, I say Christ. I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein or Superman. All I wanna do is
out there riding, what message are they trying to convey?
That bicycling is traffic too. You know, we're as legitimate, there's no bike traffic report, we're as legitimate as traffic as the automobiles. And we don't make any danger, we don't make any noise, we don't damage the road system. We're in good health generally from our biking, it's good exercise. So that probably is the main message. We are traffic and we have as much right to the roads as the drivers, who are so numerous that they just, you know, just take this street, University. I was coming up from Prince Arthur, walking on University, and I was going faster than the cars. The cars were stuck, and I believe that's every day from 5 to 6. And it's ludicrous. This is too many for the streets. It's a senseless transport mode.
I'm always for doing the critical mass not up a one-way street, but rather on a two-way street, so that the cars that are stuck in the traffic on the other lane, going in the other direction, can appreciate that the ones who may be stuck in a little bit of traffic behind us, it's not different from what's happening to them. And as you said, they themselves are causing it. You know, they're causing their own traffic jam. They're in this enclosed space, this 2,000 or 4,000 pound vehicle. They're quite isolated from all the other people in the other vehicles and from their environment. And they can't really hear what a cyclist can hear, which is these birds that we can hear right now. A cyclist that's going along at a leisurely pace and not too surrounded by the noise and the heat and the pollution that's being generated by the cars. And I don't know, I guess some of them must feel defensive because they sort of know about the pollution that they're causing, you know, but they're tied to this vehicle, which is it's a major financial commitment, right? I mean, it's more expensive than having a child, or as expensive as feeding and clothing a child, right? I've never understood how people could be that attached to their cars, but that's because I really don't like them. I try and be in them as little as possible.
I don't think, you know, private transportation as it exists right now in terms of the automobile is sustainable at all. It's very clear that that's, you know, it's not workable. And, you know, until we switch to a private system that's completely workable, you know, I'll use my bike as much as I can. But even then, even if we did have public transit, I'd probably still use my bike anyway just because it's fun.
So, if bicycles are really such an obvious choice for safe, clean, and healthy personal transportation, why do automobiles continue to dominate the landscape? Since its creation, and especially during America's post-war era, the automobile has been ruthlessly marketed to North Americans as the key to an upwardly mobile, liberated, and sexy lifestyle. Television, magazines, movies, and all sorts of mainstream media is continually saturated with car ads. Looking further into the advertising phenomenon of automobiles, we see that cars are similar to cigarettes. In the same way that cigarettes are a way to transport nicotine into the human body, automobiles are an excellent method of petroleum consumption. By using a car indiscriminately, one contributes to the well-being of oil companies, their lobby groups, and the governments, whose best interests lie in maintaining the same patterns of resource consumption that made the military-industrial complex so powerful in the first place. Of course, your average citizen isn't really thinking about the military-industrial complex when they hop into their sedans for the morning commute into the city or the evening trip to the mall. The dependence on automobiles is completely taken for granted, to the point that alternatives to everyday car use are considered impossible. This is because modern society's patterns of consumption are shaped around the individual mobility of the car. Prior to the auto, spaces where people lived, worked, and socialized were within a natural human distance from one another, encouraging social interaction, autonomy, and a sense of community. When cars allowed suburban dwellers to travel great distances from home to work to school and back, opportunities for social interaction became reduced, streamlined along axes of consumer behavior. The very act of commuting from home to work entailed the act of consuming gas to keep the car running. To compensate for the cost of car ownership, people had to work more, spending more time commuting in the desperate hope of reclaiming all of that lost time. Your average citizen finds him or herself forced into a pattern of life that is degrading, unhealthy, and expensive, ironically in the pursuit of happiness, prosperity, and the freedom promised by the automobile manufacturers. I quote Peter Frund and George Martin in their text, The Ecology of the Automobile, when they say, auto travel promotes a subtle form of false consciousness about the relationship of the individual to society. As E.P. Thompson noted, driving fosters the illusion of self-motivated freedom and disempowers people from confronting the determinism of the larger social process. On a practical level, individuals have become wedded to auto use and its advantages, including travel flexibility and convenience. Auto use has become habitual. Now that modern societies have transport systems which are based on the auto, it is difficult for individuals on their own to contemplate alternatives. In this way, practical and ideological factors are woven together in a way that impede full consciousness of the effects of auto-centered transport and the possibilities for changing it. The auto's appeal partially lies in its deep embeddedness in our cultural and psychosocial experiences as an icon of individual mastery over technology, of individual freedom, of power and speed, of social status and of sexuality. Individualist and consumerist ideologies mystify the problems engendered by auto-hegemony. Intense resource and energy use, bodily mayhem and more subtle health problems, and distortions in the fabric of social life, particularly the losses of public space and street life. A phenomenology of automobility reveals landscapes which promote a sense of sameness and placelessness, as well as a confusion of image and reality, the essence of the postmodern visual sensibility. The very social organization of space that auto-centered transport fosters helps to further auto-dependence and to mask any sense of realistic alternatives to automobility.
The car necessity was built artificially by destroying the tramways and by building roads and not public transit. But in spite of all the impediments, the cyclists represent a conscious force for progress. I'm convinced of that. Now, some of them may not be aware of it. Obviously, the critical mass ones are. But urban cycling is bypassing the radical monopoly of the car, you know, which has made so many people dependent on it.
I was born in Colombia 53 years ago. My parents always told me that you couldn't be a person in the 20th century if you didn't learn how to drive a car. But it never did agree with me, the whole idea of automobiles. And I really believe that the petroleum economy is going to destroy this planet pretty quickly. I saw a quote this morning from H.G. Wells, who said, "Every time I see an adult on a bicycle, I believe that there is some hope for this world."
When I think about car transportation and like maximum mobility, I think it's really bizarre, the system that we have. And I don't think we could have created or designed a more dangerous system than what we have right now. Because when you think about it, we're very delicate. And we're living and walking and moving within this space where there's all these really, really extremely heavy objects moving at really high speed. And we're these delicate beings moving and intertwining between them. And I think it's extremely bizarre that we live like that. And I think we should design our living conditions better. And when we do, we'll all feel a lot better about life.
Why do you think it exists this way?
It's hard to say, really. I don't know. I think it has a lot to do with like how mobility and cars and things are marketed for individuality. And how we don't think enough about what's important to all people. We only think more selfishly about ourselves. We let cars invade our cities.
Process is still going on in the richer countries.
Yeah.
Whereas in the poor ones, it's going the other way.
Yeah.
China, Vietnam. It's
sort
quite
of
sad.
A very destructive industrialization.
Yeah, and in Vietnam, where I was, organized bike tours there, and now it's more and more people going from bike to motorcycle and then to car. They even had a traffic jam at the Jin Jin Fu celebrations, where they won the battle by bikes against the French 50 years ago last week. That's very, very sad. They have this illusion that the car is such a big thing. And when you're the only one who has one, it is a great thing. But as more and more have it, it's just the growth negates its value, flexibility.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's the...
I think
North American concept of status that's repeating itself in other countries?
Yeah, according to my... It's no status now, but, according to my Vietnamese friend, he said, if I got back on a bike, my friends would laugh at me, instead of it. Because when I was there in Hanoi, everyone was on a bike and it was totally safe, You'd see an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old on the same bike and the parents not worried.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that, and it's quicker to get to work, and status. And
the capitalist ideal of selling everybody a car, because that's what keeps the economy rolling, right? Well, listen, I just came back from Bogota, okay? And I had heard a lot about their network of bicycle paths, but I hadn't really seen them, because I hadn't been in Bogota for about 10 years. And they have really, well, Bogota has nightmare car traffic. I mean, so much so that they have these laws where cars with a certain license plate are not allowed out at rush hour on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, you know, and the next week on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then the even numbers are Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the odd numbers are Tuesday, Thursday, and the next Monday. So it keeps cascading like that. As a result, some people have two and three cars, you know, which is...
Making a bad situation worse.
Yeah, no, but I mean, Bogota is a city of 9 million people, and they recently also instituted public transportation, sort of an overground subway system, a dedicated lane, or two dedicated lanes, where buses pass, those double-length buses pass every 3 or 5 or 7 minutes. And these things transport, you know, more than a million people every day. And they have made life for a lot of people a lot easier. All the people who cannot afford to have a car to start with, because those people used to have to take 3 and 4 buses to cover the same distance. And since transportation was private, they'd have to pay each time they got on a bus. Whereas now, they can go 150 blocks across the city paying just one, and they have this network of feeder buses that go from neighborhoods to the subway system. They really have some good ideas in transportation and bicycle transportation and bicycle and bus combination for mass transit. I mean, obviously we need some kind of a mass transit that will work as well as the Montreal subway works, although I find it a lot more pleasant to be out above the ground and not hurtling underneath in tunnels at 80 kilometers an hour, you know?
While the mass overuse of cars has become an international problem, grassroots activists the world over have created a phenomenon to address the hydra of automobile culture. Critical mass, as it is known, is a spontaneous congregation of cyclists whose aim is to celebrate the wonderful thing that is the bicycle. The critical mass phenomenon got its start in late September 1992, when about 50 people got together in downtown San Francisco to reappropriate that city's congested streets. The monthly ride has since spread to hundreds of cities worldwide, yet it maintains the amorphous structure and spontaneity that characterizes true grassroots movements. Each rider has a different reason for participating in critical mass. While some people are overtly political and vocal about their opposition to the global oil industry and the wars it perpetuates, others maintain a distinctly innocent, positive attitude to the ride, celebrating the magical rearrangement of urban space that occurs when such a disparate group of people suddenly coalesce into a single yet flexible unit. While critical mass has gained an international reputation as a positive activist movement, the struggle for bicyclists' rights has existed for decades. In Montreal, bicycle activists have been working to make the city bike-friendly since the 1970s. Robert Silverman, a.k.a. Bicycle Bob, was and continues to be one of Montreal's greatest defenders of bicycle culture.
But before, there were substantial amounts of cyclo-frustration, which fueled the movement.
What were your strategies?
Our strategies were, you know, we did a lot of cyclodramas. Once we dressed up as Moses and asked the Lord to separate the water so the cyclists could get across. Another time we put bicycles into a bike into a canoe and paddled across. Once we painted our own bike paths, which were very good and for which I went to jail. And then we also tried to get access to the subway. Then we did a lot of letter writing. We got resolutions from various municipalities. Finally, Quebec and the Quebec government and the Montreal government jointly built a passageway for cyclists from Notre Dame Island to the South Shore, which perhaps you've taken.
So you would say that the situation for cyclists...
Much better. Well, Montreal won even the award as the best bicycling city last year or the year before, yeah.
I mean, I personally still face a lot of frustration on a daily basis as a cyclist. People in cars tend to act very aggressively towards people on bikes.
As a matter of fact, in some ways it's got better, in some ways it's got worse, because there are more cars on the road and the police are more negligent. I'm convinced of that.
Well, I think that there was something like critical mass organized by people like Bicycle Bob Silverman and Claire Morissette 20 years ago. I don't know the exact date, but I remember a bicycle ride in Montreal where there were over 1,000 people for a critical mass type of thing. It wasn't a monthly event, but it was a bicycle demonstration in Montreal in the late 70s or the early 80s. About 5 years ago, somebody put on my bicycle a little flyer saying what critical mass is and saying, come ride with us. And I showed up there at Phillips Square, and there were maybe 30 people. We all met up. I didn't know where any of them had come from, but I knew I was there because of that little invitation.
I went on my first critical mass ride at the end of May 2004. The ride started on a sunny Friday afternoon in downtown Montreal. We turned onto St. Catherine Street with a cheer, and the pedestrians turned to look at us with confused but smiling expressions on their faces. We sang songs, cheered, hooted, and generally celebrated the phenomenon. At one point, later on in the ride, I found myself stopped in front of a big white Lincoln SUV while the end of the group passed through a red light. I smiled at the guys in the truck, and they told me to behave myself. Sure, it was a minor infraction to be blocking traffic for a few short, precious seconds, but from my perspective, the energy that he was using up with his SUV was criminally wasteful. Different points of view, I guess, but at least for once I got to express my point of view. Later on, the police eventually caught up to us, and they corralled us to the side of the road. Everybody got a ticket for exactly the same thing, riding in the middle of the road, a fine of $37. The police were pretty nice about it, also making a point of telling us about all the reflectors that were missing from most people's bikes that they weren't ticketing us for. At one point, a city bus got stuck between a police van and the parked cars on the opposite side of the street, blocking traffic completely on St. Catherine Street for about 5 minutes. I felt bad for the commuters, but I really had to thank the police for making our point so eloquently for us. The irony of the situation demonstrated an interesting thing. As a cohesive force, critical mass could stop traffic too. But the micromobility of bicycles meant that the group could change shape or disperse very easily. Automobiles, on the other hand, are often impaired by their size, especially in downtown traffic.
Just the power of the bicycles together, you know, in the traffic, but as a mass. I mean, generally you're going, it's downtown and it's a Friday afternoon and there's a traffic jam because that's just the way it is, you know. But once in a while you can slow down enough traffic behind you that you can look up St. Lawrence Street or up another street and see nothing but space for and look behind, and it's nothing but cars. When the cars start to honk, 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 you know, I just tell them, relax, it's just another traffic jam that you're in, you know. But it's quite wonderful being on them. It's when you, when it finishes, and then you have to ride back home alone in the traffic, that you appreciate the mass, the critical mass.
Solidarity that it sort of imparts to your actions.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but and the empowerment of the bicycles.
Kind of still up in the air about whether this is a route to go to get more people to bike and to get better sort of infrastructure in the city to bike in. I don't know whether sort of pissing off motorists and doing that is the right way to go. So I was mainly coming down here to see what it was all about and things like that. But I'm probably atypical of a person that would be here, and that I'm not really part of the activist community in Montreal or anything like that. But I think that's maybe telling in that it's something that's pretty across the board of people. Like, a lot of different people like to bike in downtown, and a lot of people find it hard to do so because of a lack of places where it's safe to bicycle. So yeah, I think it kind of crosses a few stereotypical political boundaries, right?
I guess critical mass is important because it's a way to really bring I think it really does bring people's attention, particularly when there's people handing out flyers to people on the street and things like that as well. I don't think it makes much of a difference to just be biking down a street in a big group and pissing people off unless you're also explaining why it is that you're doing it. It draws attention to how difficult it actually is to bike in a city and how inaccessible it actually is in a city to use a bike or to have a bike. And not only that, but I think it's important from the perspective of the people that are doing it as well, because it provides a sense of security and a sense of community in a way that biking normally doesn't. So it sort of increases people's excitement for biking. I don't know. I guess I do think that depending on how it is that you go about it, it is a good way to bring attention to traffic issues and to transportation issues, and particularly when it's connected to a greater movement or a greater campaign around some sort of issue that's related to environment or related to oil or consumption or whatever that happens to be.
Are people being political when they decide to join a critical mass ride?
I think most people are. I mean, some people just sort of join up because it's fun and you get to bike on the streets and you don't have to worry about cars, and sometimes there's music and sometimes there's people yelling and noisemakers and stuff, and it's fun, right? But I think most people who come to a critical mass, or who, like, especially people who come regularly, come because they have some sort of political belief that people should find alternate means of transportation. I would say probably my favorite biking story was the first time that I biked after fixing up my own bike. It actually ended up kind of being a disaster because I fixed up one problem and ended up creating a bigger problem. But until the bigger problem came around, it was really exciting. So it was kind of like this sort of sense of power that I created my own wheels. And then my front axle broke and I ended up like falling in the middle of traffic. But okay, so the beginning was really good.
Je crois que c'est une fois que j'allais vraiment vite, puis je suis rentré dans un garage, puis j'ai freiné, je suis passé par-dessus le guidon, puis j'ai atterri la tête dans une poubelle. Puis je me suis même pas fait mal, j'étais très chanceux. Mais sinon, je pense que c'est au quotidien, c'est tellement un moyen de transport qui, à Montréal en tout cas, qui permet d'aller plus vite que n'importe qui, puis tu zigzagues entre les voitures, puis c'est un sentiment de liberté incroyable. Ça défoule. Ça défoule.
Best thing that ever happened to me on a bike. Some very special things that have happened to me on a bike have been going with my daughter, my 4 and 5 year old daughter. on critical mass bicycle rides. At first on one of those little seats, and then afterwards on one of those trailer bicycles, and then she herself on her own bicycle. She's been the littlest bicycle rider at critical mass a couple of years running. The image of a child being in this group, you know, I think enhances the idea of what it is.
And it was like minus 30, and I was remember for some crazy reason being really excited to get back out on my bike again, and there was like a fresh snowfall, and just to have the crunch of the snow under my bike tire, I really enjoyed that, even though I was completely frozen.
My best biking story, I would say, was in Cuba. Because Cuba got a lot of bikes, and the economy collapsed when the Soviet Union collapsed, and they could not get gas for their buses and for their trucks. And they got Chinese bikes in 1993, 1994, a million of them or more. So we wanted to, since there were no cars, we wanted to go to Cuba and to study this. And we did. And we were biking in the Isle of Pines on the south coast of Cuba in the Caribbean. And there was an area where you had to have a pass. It was called the Island Ecology Area, a very beautiful island. So we went in, and at the same time, a huge SUV approached, belonging to a yachtsman, like a millionaire yachtsman. And we had permission, we cyclists, and this millionaire couldn't get into this part. And it's the only place in the world where money doesn't talk.
I'd like to thank Robert Silverman and Francisco Uribe for their wonderful help on this project, as well as everybody who gathers for critical mass rides in Montreal. For a full list of my sources, please contact news@ckut.ca.